time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I didn't do it. This is the dang Michigan State coach bringing this up. I'm just reporting the news here. I'm like Walter Cronkite.
Russ Dellinger.
At one point, it will just be a lot of big brands playing each other. But the regional rivalries is the thing that's kind of taking a hit during this whole realignment. And it's really like the saddest part of it, probably.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Every complaint in college sports starts with a coach who lost a kid in recruiting to somebody else.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod presented by Invesco QQQ. We got more Mel Tucker.
Boy.
More Tuck coming. More transfer portal on the phone. More everything. It was ugly. It's getting uglier. Dueling statements. Tucker responds. Brenda Tracy responds to Tucker. Tucker says this system, this Title IX or whatever this hearing thing is, not fair. They're not going to be able to cross-examine witness. She says, go ahead and cross-examine me. Everybody's throwing stuff out there. I've read through it all for you, the listener. This is the service I provide. It's juicy if you really want to get into it. It's also mostly pointless. There are some important parts, and then there's a whole bunch of stuff that I don't really understand being germane to anything other than they liked each other and then they didn't, and we had to find out all the details of both situations. In the end, though, there's zero chance that Mel Tucker is coaching Michigan State again. His basic error was, you know, in the spring of 2022, when he was sitting there with his new $95 million contract, there were essentially two ways for him to lose all that money. One was to get arrested. And I'm going to assume, like most of us, Mel Tucker does not commit any crimes. And the only crime he could probably really commit was DUI. I mean, that's the crime that you can wake up anybody could wake up and commit that day. You're probably not all of a sudden becoming like a bank robber or, stick up a liquor store or something like that. So you have that. And I would assume if you have that in your contract, you have a $95 million contract, you make sure you don't do that. So the other was basically this. Get into a situation where you have a little chaotic relationship with someone the university is hiring, particularly someone who is a rape survivor and an educator to prevent sexual assaults. And you then get into kind of a little bit of a wild situation where the relationship ends up where she accuses you of sexual harassment. Now, Tucker has said in a statement, he and his wife are estranged. He details all of none of this stuff should really matter. The real issue here is that she was paid by the university. He had some control over whether she would be paid again and all of that. And everything comes down to this one single phone call in April of 2022, where things go from just talking. They talked a lot on the phone to what do we call it yesterday?
He portaled. I think we've come up with our own euphemism for this. I think it's pretty good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hit the transfer portal on the thing. She says she froze, and called this sexual harassment later on. Didn't immediately. Mel Tucker's explanation is this was a mutual private event between two adults living on opposite ends of the country. She initiated the discussion that night, suggested what she might look like without clothes, and never once during the 36 minutes did she object in any manner, much less hang up. Two things. One, obviously 36 minutes, plenty of time to hang up, I guess is what he's implying. Also, I think he got that 36 minutes in there so he didn't get like patinoed with that 7 seconds. Remember that?
Patino was 15, although it also was later downsized to 10. But, you know, yes, the point is made.
Was it 15? I thought it was like 8. No?
No. It depends on which time the explanation is being heard. But it was either 15 or 10. Trust me. Anyway.
36 minutes. I mean, stamina, Mel. Stamina.
Yeah. Impressive.
36 minutes. Holy cow.
Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear.
Keep chopping wood. So anyway, you know, what happened here, what didn't. My one question, I'm getting away from this part. I don't know what to tell you.
Hey, we're off the rails.
36 minutes. Hey,
3 minutes in.
I didn't do it. This is the dang Michigan State coach bringing this up. I'm just reporting the news here. I'm like Walter Cronkite. Can't make the news.
Yeah, just like him. Chopping wood.
This is not a Walter Cronkite conversation.
I think it is. I think it is.
Oh, Walter's rolling around in the graves.
All right. So I have two issues here. Okay. One is, it took a while for her to report, but when she eventually reports in December, she reports in December 22nd, so it's December 2022. This is Title IX. Michigan State launches this investigation. Having read through everything, this should have taken like 10 days, not 10 months. Why? Like, what is this process they have that turned this thing into a murder trial, a federal case? This seems like something that could have got I mean, if you get all the details here, that, well, the text messages, both sides deleted their text messages, so who knows what's on there? Because you don't, you know, like, I have text messages from like 8 years ago. Like, I'll get a text every once in a while from like a guy I haven't heard from in like 5 years, be like, you know, go Bruins or something like that. You don't delete hey, you want to get a pizza? You know, that's not the stuff that gets deleted. So who knows what's on there? But there's no text messages. There's phone records. And then there's both sides saying, well, you know, this one call. Nothing else really matters. Why did it take so long? Seems like this could have gotten wrapped up without ruining the season one way or the other. But at the end of the day, the original sin of just do not get in a relationship with Brenda Tracy. Like, I just think every this is why we have stupid videos. Anybody who works in a corporation has to watch these like ridiculous training videos. Like, you shouldn't have to. And you go, gosh, who wouldn't know that? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if the new choice
A, B, and C,
the new intern walks by, should you comment on her skirt length? No.
No. Yes. Maybe.
No. Just good. Or should. Then it's always. Ask HR. That's always like the
yeah.
If in doubt, no, don't say a dang word, right? You know, Mel. I mean, it's, I don't know. They're gonna argue all these points. That's my thing. The original sin is it, and he ain't winning games. I mean, if this is Kirby Smart, you know, it's, well, you know, he has no support from the fans. So Pat, I don't know your thoughts. Yeah. Once again, Walter Cronkite set this story up poorly.
No, I mean, I will say, yes, this is now all extremely public. It's gone from being completely underground for many months to now, holy moly, I mean, we are hearing way too much information. To Dan's point, a lot of what is being said back and forth really doesn't matter a whole lot, but geez Louise, we're getting plenty of it. That's funny. I look back actually at my text messages, and somebody in early August said, hey, have you been hearing anything about Mel Tucker? And they're very vague. That's really all they said. And I started asking around and I got no answers. And clearly this is what was happening with Mel Tucker. But the fact that this person who texted me does not work at Michigan State makes me wonder about how exactly secret everything at Michigan State really was. But anyway, yeah, look, to your question, I have no idea why it's taken this long to get through. I don't know what all the processes have been. This is way different, obviously, than an NCAA investigation, but having, you know, gone through a lot of those just from a journalistic standpoint and from a trying to figure out what's going on standpoint, things can take a lot longer than you want them to in terms of getting documentation or lawyers being involved and saying, well, we're going to need more time for this or we're going to need more time for that. So if all those things kind of piled up in this sort of situation, maybe that's why this spilled all the way into September here. But, we hopefully will get a resolution in October, but the longer it goes on, the bigger disservice it is to Michigan State's football team. And to Dan's point, look, I think there's wild buyer's remorse at Michigan State about the contract. And if this is a chance to get them out of this, I think they would take it.
Yeah, I'm guessing the sensitivity around Title IX and the subject of the Title IX investigation being somebody of such prominence, like the football coach who makes $9.5 million a year, is partly why they it took so long. I'm assuming most Title IX investigations are really kind of lengthy in nature and thorough. I remember, a few years back, LSU's Title IX investigation, which Kenny Jacoby also reported around, took several months as well. It was a little more broad, that one. I'm guessing a lot of them are pretty thorough. What's been shocking, like yesterday, was just the public kind of side taking or comments from each side. The public comments from each side. Like Mel Tucker's attorney released that long statement, and then Brenda Tracy responded on Twitter multiple times, I believe. It's been usually when you have like sexual harassment type Title IX cases like this, you don't get as much public commentary. Oftentimes the victim is not even mentioned at all, and this one is definitely different.
Yeah, this is wide open. That's certainly sure. I don't know. I mean, I get the argument. It's like, well, look, this is a phone call. This could be a lot worse, all that. I don't know. I just think if you're hiring someone to come in, especially on this topic, like you got to be smarter. You just got to be smarter. So, and especially when you've got this massive contract, this was just dumb. The whole story is stupid. So we'll find out what the details are more. Maybe there will be a cross-examination. I'm guessing Mel Tucker will get all the information out. And I don't blame him at this point because Brenda Tracy's getting all the information out.
Right.
So we're going to find out more. Ongoing saga. Question here. Tucker's as good as gone. They haven't fired him yet, but they're trying to figure out how much they got to pay. I also think this statement of Mel going public is a shot at Michigan State saying, you think you're going to take all seven? He's owed $77 million, I believe the Detroit News estimated. You're going to pay me some of that, or we're going to keep talking.
Yep.
Thought he was going to keep his job, if anybody thought that he was going to keep his job before yesterday, the statement obviously made it pretty clear that he's not.
So we went into this year with very few teams on the hot seat. Remember, we are very few coaches and almost none. We'll see what happens like Jimbo. There's always some surprises, like, someone could retire. You never know, and everything could shake up. But there were not a lot of coaches on the hot seat, particularly at jobs that would be more appealing to than Michigan State. And so, in a way, this could be a boon for Michigan State, which gets out of this this huge contract of a coach that there is very little faith was going to turn it around. The recruiting had not been good. There's very little momentum. Michigan is rolling. Notre Dame is rolling. Ohio State is rolling. All these schools, the three schools they have to really fight regionally for top talent. It's a tough spot. It was going to be a tough spot for Mel Tucker. I think a lot of Michigan State fans had thought, we're not going to have a great year this year. We're going to have a great year next year. Maybe we get down to the point where we can buy him out. There was certainly that segment. But they may have their shot now at the best candidate. Who would you hire? If you could wave a magic wand, and obviously we're not talking about like Lincoln Riley or something like that, but a reasonable wand, and you're Michigan State.
A reasonable wand.
I mean, let's give the Spartan fans, I mean, they're sitting around here in about 36-minute wood chopping sessions. The poor guy, let's give him a little something. Can they get a good coach up in Beast Lansing? Can we get back to that? Because this is just embarrassing.
Yeah. Yes, they can get a good coach. They can. I it's a good job. Now, you pointed out the biggest difficulty in the job, which is you are surrounded by programs that are historically better than yours, and they're all hitting on high cylinders right now. So from that standpoint, it's a little bit...
Could throw Penn State in on that, too.
Challenging. Yeah, absolutely. But man, it's a Big Ten job. You get good resources, big following. You know, it's certainly in the upper half of the Big Ten coaching positions, and you're getting out of the conference alignment, which has locked you in with those rivals in the East Division every year. So I still think it's a very good job. In the 40-yard dash earlier this week, I listed a couple of candidates they should at least consider. I think Jason Candle has got it back rolling at a high level at Toledo. He was one of those guys power conference schools were looking at a couple of years ago. He had a little bit of a dip. He's back. He won the league last year. He has the best team this year. I think the Pac-2 coaches could be very much looking to be mobile. And one of them, Jake Dickert, at Washington State, which is not an easy job, has now beaten Wisconsin back-to-back years. And then Jonathan Smith's done a great job at Oregon State. That was just kind of me thinking off the top of my head with a little bit more thought to it. I would put Lance Leipold in there, who's just done a phenomenal job at Kansas, has Midwestern ties as well. And then it might be time once again to kick the tires on Mark Stoops at Kentucky and see if he's tired of looking up at the Georgia, Alabama, LSU, et cetera, ceiling in that league.
You know, the one that sticks out to me is one that I think a few years ago was in the mix when Mel got the job, and he has deep roots to the program, is Pat Narduzzi at Pitt. I don't know, you know, I think they lost to Cincinnati this past week. So I don't know how they're going to fare this year, but obviously he's done pretty consistently good job there. He's had some really good teams at Pitt. So he's the one that kind of maybe sticks out to me. And I thought maybe that he was at least in the mix there when a lot of that kind of came up. You know, another one that kind of also sticks out a little bit is other than the ones Pat named, because I think Jason Candle is a really good option too. The other one is Mike Elko at Duke. You know, he's obviously having incredible success, and I wonder if he would look at, you know, getting in the Big Ten as, you know, an upgrade for a great many reasons. So those are a couple, but it certainly is a attractive job. Just let alone you're in the Big Ten, and I think one of the biggest things Pat just said it is, you're not stuck with the Michigans and the Ohio States in any kind of division anymore. And that, I think that's important for your possibility of success down the line.
Yeah. When Mark D'Antonio had it going, they're beating those guys. I mean, they won the Big Ten a couple times. So it's got a lot, you know, a lot of media markets. You're not far from Chicago, not from Detroit. You got to hold your own. Candle makes a ton of sense. He has excellent recruiting ties in the state of Michigan, including the city of Detroit. And Cass Tech and King High, which produce a lot of players. They're starting quarterback Daquan Finns from King. That's Sauce Gardner School. That's Dante Moore School. That's, you know, if you have that, you're walking in like that. Chris Klieman at K-State, I would throw in. I'd agree with all these others. A little bit of an interesting one. What about Brian Hartline, Ohio State OC, who's just crushed
recruiting. Monster. Yeah.
Recruiting monster. Huge national ties. Exciting offense. He's young. I feel like he'd be more like coming in and going, Michigan State's got tons of money. Mel Tucker was sitting around complaining we don't have any money around here. Also that line too. two weeks.
It's all in his pocket.
2 weeks before this came out, did not help.
No.
Did not help. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of moneyed guys going, we've given you everything.
Yeah.
You got the richest contract.
Did he say something 2 weeks prior? I missed that.
Yeah, he didn't have.
No, we talked about it a little.
They only have a couple $1 million for NIL. They don't have enough money.
Yes.
They just rebuilt everything up there.
Yeah.
He's got billionaires. I mean, Michigan State is a huge school. I get in the past, and we're about to get to this. I'm going to get to this point. In the past, it's hard because facilities and historic excellence mattered a great deal in recruiting. But Michigan State should never be sitting around going, boy, if only we had money. Mm-hmm. They have 50-something thousand students. They have hundreds of thousands of alums, including a whole bunch of billionaires and huge millionaires. And I live in Metro Detroit. Like, the Spartans are so prideful, and they got tons of successful people, and all they want to do is be better than Michigan. Like, you would tap into all of that.
Yeah.
And so when you're sitting around going, geez, you know, we just don't have enough, that was not good. Mel is just how to lose a job. And I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
You know,
he's like pressed a lot of wrong buttons.
Yeah. He is not thinking. He is not good. Not thinking in a lot of different ways. So anyway, there you go. Spartans. We'll give you a little something positive to dream about. It's going to get worse. All right. A couple weeks ago, I think the biggest story of the season so far, other than Coach Prime and all that, and the Pac-12, but this plays into the Pac-12 story. SEC 3-6, and not just 3-6, but double digit, not really good showings, kind of big losses. Texas over Alabama, Florida State over LSU, North Carolina over South Carolina, Utah over Florida. There's one more pretty good one in there somewhere. Can't remember.
Yeah. Oh, Texas A&M getting ripped by Miami.
Okay. Now they go. Well, we got three wins. Okay. Yeah. You know, you beat Virginia. Yeah, you know, I don't care about Wake and Vandy. The best win they have is Ole Miss Tulane. I mean, yeah. Auburn goes to Cal and barely wins. Overtime in Arizona for Mississippi. The SEC is not dominant. Now, we'll see what Georgia does. Georgia's going to play a ranked team. First ranked game is in November.
Yeah.
But this league is not what it was. To get two teams in, they're going to need, other than Ole Miss, someone's got to come out of the West undefeated, and then you could lose to Georgia in the title game. You get two teams in the college football playoff. Otherwise, if it's not Ole Miss, which I no offense to Arkansas and some of the others, probably not going to make it. But like Bama, LSU, or A&M's got to go all the way and then beat Georgia. So we'll see if they could do that. But we haven't seen anything from those teams that suggest they're capable of doing it. So this is a down year. Conversely, the Pac-12 is rolling. They have 8 ranked teams. And I know we're 2 weeks in, but they have all sorts of good victories. They look great. They have all these exciting guys. They have 12 quarterbacks in the Pac-12. 10 of them are transfers. Everybody except Jaden Rashada at Arizona State, who got there because Florida screwed up its NIL deal, and Dante Moore at UCLA. Everybody else is a transfer, all 10 quarterbacks. And you're talking DJ Uiagalelei at Oregon State and Bo Nix at Oregon and Michael Penix at Washington and Caleb Williams at USC and Cam Rising at Utah is from Texas and all stuff. So the transfer portal, and I said it a couple weeks ago when I used to think the transfer portal was kind of a net neutral. Now I think it is a net positive in a big way for college football because it has spread out the talent even more than NIL, although I think NIL plays a part. NIL has allowed schools to focus on a singular recruit and dump a ton of money at them. Now, I don't know what exactly happened in this situation, but Micah Hudson, one of the top wide receivers, 5-star, just committed to Texas Tech. He was a priority recruit for Texas Tech. They went all in on him. We've seen that with Missouri, with others, Boise State. Right now, there are 34 of the top 40 players have committed. They're going to 19 different schools.
Interesting number.
We'll see what happens at the end. There's flips.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think George is sitting there going, oh, okay. You say you're going to Boise State. Well, we're not exactly not sending you a mail, right? But we will see. Right now it's 19. I go back before all of NIL. In 2018, the top 40 players went to 13 schools. Mm. 2017, the top 40 went to 15. 2016, the top 40 went to 19. 2015, 18. So we're already at the top. If anything, talent in the high school recruiting at that elite level is either even or being spread out more. You talk about the transfer portal. You have all these elite quarterbacks going to find their spot. I've said talent will find its level like water. These kids aren't flocking to the biggest school. They're flocking to playing time. They no longer care when you're 20 years old about the stadium size, the conference affiliation, what the young lady on the campus tour looks like, how close I am to mom, what the colors are, what the kids in the hall will think if I sign with this school over that school. They're spreading out around the country. And I did another little look. I did a lot of research. Okay,
this is unbelievable. Look unprecedented at this. Research.
I know.
I'm obsessed with this theory prepared. Now. Okay,
you should be exhausted. The amount of effort you've put into this podcast.
I kind of am. I got to admit, I kind of am. 24/7 Sports has the composite talent ratings. We've all seen this. They basically who's still on the they take their recruiting classes, who's on the roster, who transferred in, this, that, and anything. And it is it's an excellent predictor on who's going to be good. So you're still dealing with your high school rating, and there's a whole bunch of stuff like that. But that said, it's what we have, and it's been a very good, it's where you sit there and say, wait, number one Alabama's playing number four Notre Dame in the semifinal, and you go, yeah, Alabama's got 22 5-stars on their team, and Notre Dame has two.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they do this composite. They add up all the points. They have a whole point system. Is this perfect? No, but I don't know how you, and if it was perfect, someone would figure it out and they'd be the general manager in the NFL. So the difference between number one in 2023 and like number 10, number 15, and number 25 is much closer than it used to be before the transfer portal. So I'll give an example. In 2017, 2023, Alabama has the most talented roster. They have 1,015 points. That's how they break them, whatever. In 2017, they had the number one roster is 997 points. So they are 1.7% more talented now than they were in 2017. However, the 10th best team, this year it's Oregon, is 5.3% more talented, according to this, than 10th was in 2017. Florida is number 15 on this list. They're 4% more talented. UCLA is 25th. They are 7.2% more talented. So like they have 752 points in 2017, number 25 at 698 points. So teams are 5, 6, 7, and it clears out. I'm not going to throw numbers after number after number. But year after year, you go back to the late teens, and these teams now in 10, 15, 25 are 6, 7, 8, 9% more talented, according to this composite, than they were. And the gap between 25 and 1 is that much closer, 6, 7%. You add all that up in the composite, and I just think you have a more level playing field a little bit. Doesn't mean Georgia might not win it or Michigan might not win it, but that's where you're getting some of the stuff. In the SEC, which used to have a huge talent advantage, has a much lesser talent advantage, and that's what we're seeing.
Boom.
Did any of that make sense?
Yeah. No, it's great. Just yesterday was pitching to me, one of me and Dan's editors at Yahoo about, hey, I think I need to dive into a story about why the SEC is down, and, you know, because it relates to the transfer portal, and I'm going to compile some numbers. Dan did all the numbers. He's got it. He's got the
Let's
answers.
Let's do dual byline, baby. Go. Dual byline. Let's do it.
Double byline. No, it's great stuff. I mean, we talked about it last year when at the start of last season, there was a lot of upsets and things like that. I remember there being a lot of G5 upsets, and a lot of it was because of transfer quarterbacks, the transfer quarterback position. It just the portal, NIL to some degree, but definitely the portal, right, is making it possible for quarterbacks who either weren't playing at their big powerhouse school or were, you know, dismissed or whatever, to transfer and to play immediately. And that incentive to play immediately is huge. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing here. And those are great numbers that kind of back all that up. That shockingly, that NIL and the portal are not a bad thing necessarily for the parity of the sport. You know, recently I was speaking to somebody in politics involved with the NIL legislation on Capitol Hill, and they went to the old argument of, the problem is I don't want the, you know, this person wants Congress to get involved in an NIL bill, and he was using parity and the lack of parity in the parity being hurt by the NIL, right, and the portal as a reason that a bill should pass. And I told him, I was like, look, let me tell you something about parity. It's really not that way. And I use the example of opening weekend, and I know it's just a small snapshot. Dan's numbers are more broader and paint a bigger picture, but I use the Colorado having 70 new players and Texas State having 50 new players, and both of them upsetting teams, Baylor and TCU, with maybe you could say more established programs. And I was telling this person, look, the parity it's not been impacted. In fact, it's been impacted the other way, right? There might be more parity, and we're starting to see that, and the numbers back it up.
Yeah, they're all wrong. The coaches are wrong.
And the congressmen are wrong too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, look, here's what strikes me about especially the quarterback position. And you could maybe extrapolate this to other positions, wide receiver as well. There's more good quarterbacks than ever. They're being better coached. They're in better offenses at younger ages. They're capable of going into a college situation and playing well, but there's only the same amount of playing time, right? Everybody plays one quarterback. You get a starter and you go with that quarterback. So if you want to play, you've got good quarterbacks who aren't playing or don't like their situation. And so, yes, you're spreading them out. You are diffusing them to more places around the country, and they're being utilized well. And so you're seeing it now. And right now, yeah, hey, I'll say this. The SEC would love to trade quarterbacks with the Pac-12, because this is not a great year for quarterbacks in the SEC as of this juncture. And they would love to have back some of the guys from last year. It's not how it works. Stetson Bennett is gone. Bryce Young is gone. Hendon Hooker is gone, so on and so forth. But there's a lot of good players out there, and they're getting their shots now. And so you see definitely more of a leveling of the playing field. The one thing you don't see, and we haven't seen like an FCS upset, I don't believe, of an FBS one. Team. One? Okay.
No, there we two go. This weekend, two. Oh. Buffalo and
Southern Illinois beat Northern Illinois is the one that I saw.
And then Buffalo lost to somebody.
Oh. Okay.
We have lost that. That is undoubtedly. Those guys are jumping. But who cares?
Right.
Sorry, Sean Anderson, our producer, who runs a tremendous FCS podcast. But I'm not really caring about whether Buffalo lost to an FCS. You know, Holy Cross almost beat BC. Well, right. Okay, whatever. I'm caring about the top is it's not just the same teams.
Right.
And I want to see more time on this. I'm not done on. I'm not all in on this. But here's my thing with all of these discussions. They scream like hyenas that the sky is falling, and they have no idea. They have no data, and they want to make rules that will impact everybody based on, well, a couple old coaches are mad someone moved the cheese and their industry changed. Yeah. Oh, and the guy's leaving for money. No. Maybe they all went to certain conferences because back in the day, certain conferences weren't too afraid about money. Maybe it's all about playing time. Because do you really just want to get paid and sit on the bench? You want to go play? I don't know. You know, I just think, let's see. But if you're looking at these results, you're going, wait a minute. For the first time in 15 years, the SEC isn't that good. Yep. And the Pac-12, which is supposed to never be good, all of a sudden's got all these players. This seems like a good thing. This is exactly the opposite, the exact opposite of what every one of these people screamed would happen and went to Congress as recently as weeks ago, screaming, "This is, we have to stop this because look," and I get why Ross's politician thought that, because that's what he's being told. But the facts aren't there. And I at the very least, let's let this play out a couple years and go, wait a minute. I think we're going to look back and go, hey, you should bring back the transfer anytime you want.
Yeah, and I'll say it's probably more the portal than NIL. I think you mentioned that, Dan. Like, it probably is, right? It's more the portal. Now, I think the NIL piece, especially when you're talking about a kid who is, say, you know, a backup or doesn't get much playing time at a major school and wants to drop down and play immediately, there is probably some financial incentive to going and leaving. I don't think a lot of Group of Five schools are gonna be paying what, you know, in NIL, what a Power Five is. But if you're a backup at a Power Five, you know, say you make X in a Group of Five at some places at least, or even a lower Power Five team, even like SEC to Pac-12 teams, can probably pay as much, especially if you're coming in as a starter. You know, so, but it's the one-time transfer exception that has really kind of changed the ball game here.
I agree. Let me give you one thing and I'll let Pat say it. NIL, here's why NIL changed. If you signed with a school out of high school and they gave you 50 grand, they paid your mom's water bill, they did whatever they did, you can't leave. You are stuck. You are black. You sit there and say, hey, man, I want to go. I want to drop down. I want to go over here. What, really? Because if this gets out, you know, now they have some law. You sit there and say, hey, man, I'm canceling that deal. I'm taking that. That 100% happened. And every person in college athletics knows it. They all know it, that Absolutely. Kind of stuff happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
they may not want to admit it. They might not say, well, no. But they all know there was you were blackmailed. Once you took some money, oh, well, we know you were dealing with that agent. We know you got that deal with that agent. So you're not going anywhere. You're going to stay right here. Now it's like, hey, I can't do anything with them. They get to leave. So that's a part of this. But go ahead, Pat.
No, that's a quick story on that. The family ended up denying it, so the story didn't ever actually happen. But I remember being told by boosters from one school who were pretty credible in the SEC that there was a kid who was committed to another SEC school, and that school was paying for the family's phone bills or cell phones. And the kid had committed, but he decided he wanted to take a visit to that school's rival. Well, by the time he got back from the visit, the service had been cut off for all their family phones. So that was the kind of power that was being wielded over recruits back in the day. Now it's a little harder to play that game. You know, you can get your phone bill paid for whoever, and nobody has to lie about it or pretend it's not happening. So it's fascinating dynamic. And I'm sure, yes, like to Ross's point, there are some people that are making monetary decisions. But I do think that one of the big, big drivers here is much more, where can I play? Where can I fit in? Where can I best further my chances to eventually have a professional career?
Right. So I'm eager to see how this season plays out and as this goes, but I think it's the margins. It's the margins. And it's the little stuff. We were talking about this, like, is Boise State going to sign a bunch of top 40 recruits? No, but when there's one in Idaho and they can pour everything into it, now they can. And that's one less player at one school. You know, could Texas Tech going to sign more five stars than Georgia? No, they never are. But if they want to get one, well, maybe they can get it done now. And those little you get it at the margins, and all of a sudden, hey, this team's number 25, 7% better than they were before. And they've closed the gap on one. Because, I mean, it really, for years, it's been, if you're outside the top six, you aren't even really competitive.
Yeah.
Now, I think maybe you are. I don't know. We're going to get there. I just hit the brakes. Everyone going to Congress screaming that the parity's a problem. I don't know what I just don't think they're being honest.
Every complaint in college sports starts with a coach who lost a kid in recruiting to somebody else. And then all of a sudden the system's broken. We got to fix the system. I'm going to my AD. Oh, shoot, my coach is mad. I better go to the president. Oh, the coach is, oh my gosh, everybody's mad. We better go to Congress and so on and so forth. We better go to the commissioner. That's what all this boils down to. It's my ox is being gored in recruiting, so we've got to change something.
Most of the people, when the transfer exception was introduced, most people had concern over the power schools, especially given NIL, going down and getting the best players in the group of five, you know, and that widening the gap. And while we've seen a little bit of that, maybe say 20% of that, 80% of it has been the other way around, you know, yeah. I think.
It goes both ways. I've been saying that all along. I think we're onto something here. We're going to find out, though. All right, we'll be right back after this message. All right, this is not our most exciting slate of games this weekend. You got Colorado is always exciting. They'll probably get 10 million people to watch because it's Coach Prime. Colorado State's visiting the Buffs. Fox is sending their big noon kickoff game to Colorado. It's three straight weeks with Colorado. They aren't broadcasting the big noon game. They always go with the big noon game. It's like Illinois, Penn State. They're like, screw it. We're sticking with Prime. That's how powerful this guy is.
Yeah.
We told you on this podcast, you should have hired him. We told a lot of schools they should have hired him.
Yes, we did.
Nobody wanted to interview him. Pretty interesting. Well, they got interviewed. They got scared. There are not major games. There are some very interesting games. I think Washington visiting Michigan State will be interesting. What does Michigan State do? But this is not a good slate of games. And I want to point out that this is the problem and why we have conference realignment, because the television networks are sitting around going, we're paying out all this money. What the heck are we showing this weekend? If Colorado State, Colorado is the most exciting game because Deion Sanders showed up, that's great, but that's all you got. And I want to point out a game that is part of the reason why we had to upend the sport and why we wish we had somebody with some kind of common sense. Louisville and Indiana are separated by what? 2 hours? Not even 2 hours?
Right. About an hour 45 through the scenic Hoosier Hills of Southern Indiana.
Beautiful. Yes. Beautiful drive. Louisville, Indiana. They have not played since 1986. They had a two-game series, 85 and 86. They recently signed a three-year deal. First game is this Saturday, Lucas Oil Stadium. Then they go home and home. This makes perfect sense. Louisville's a better program than Indiana, but not exactly too much. Both schools could use fan excitement as these conferences expand. It's a nice regional rivalry. Indiana and Louisville should probably play all the time. But if not, they should be playing regularly. This makes total sense. Both schools want to be matter in Indianapolis, a pretty good recruiting market. We're going to play. Indiana, they're going to play Saturday. Indiana is canceling the next two games. Indiana is backing out of the Louisville series. And they have to pay a $1 million per game fine, which they can totally afford because the Big Ten's got so much money. So the Big Ten has to expand to create more interesting matchups. And at the exact same time, one of their schools that rarely has an interesting matchup, and this is about as interesting as it gets regionally, is backing out of the series so they can play, and they've stated, an FCS opponent. And a lot of schools do this. This isn't just Indiana. But this is frustrating when you say we destroyed the Pac-12 because we need better Big Ten games. And here potentially is a pretty decent Big Ten game that could be shown in the Big Ten package. Maybe the Lucas Oil game, certainly the one in Bloomington. Pat, thoughts on this topic as a whole, not necessarily, hey, Indiana, you know, toughen up to play Louisville, but it's, you know, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, no, first of all, the fine will go to the Kenny Payne Separation Agreement Fund at Louisville for men's basketball, I suspect. But no, this, look, what routinely, reliably happens.
Hold on. That's why I love that. He just had to throw a little Kenny just Payne Louisville basketball.
Just a little jab.
Kenny Payne catching strays on the College Football Inquirer.
You know, they were 4-28 last year. I don't like his chances.
I know you're outraged. I know you're like everyone else in the league. That'll get you a free drink down at your Kearns Tavern by your Louisville fan. I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. Poor Kenny Payne. He's just it's September.
Sorry.
Go Kenny. Ahead. Go ahead to your point.
He's a nice man.
He's a nice guy. Yeah. So, yeah. You really. But imagine if you didn't like him. Jeez. Poor kid.
College sports routinely, reliably does this to the fan bases, though. They get rid of the matchups they want to see. TCU just paused the series with SMU. The frying pan or the iron skillet battle.
Yeah. Really?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They need it. They need scheduling flexibility. So we hear. On and on. Look, the backyard brawl, which is being played this weekend, is not played every year anymore between Pittsburgh and West Virginia. Scheduling flexibility, i.e. we need to schedule some easy games in here. No, this is, look, it has been a long time frustration of mine and probably you guys too, just watching this transpire where you take away games that are good for the sport, good for the fans that they want to see, and you replace them because you feel like you need to win games or you need to do something that appeals more to your bottom line. And this is once again where then you ask the fans to root for revenue. Well, we get a home game out of this. Okay, great. How many Indiana fans of all fickle football fans are going to be like, oh, this is a good thing because now we get to play Illinois State at home, and I can't wait for that. That's going to be awesome when we play that game next year. It's bad.
Well, I thought that we were starting to kind of come back around to home, you know, Power Five home and homes. At least some schools have. Like, they've stopped playing the neutral site. Some of them have even stopped playing FCS and have scheduled these really big, you know, home and home Power Fives. Like, Alabama has started doing it. Florida started doing it. LSU started doing it a little bit. They're playing more neutral site, but I wish it would go that way. And, you know, I think the thought is that as college sports, football, whatever, continues to evolve from a consolidation of big brands, that at one point it will just be a lot of big brands playing each other. But the regional rivalries is the thing that's kind of taken a hit during this whole realignment. And it's really like the saddest part of it, probably.
I just feel like we wouldn't need to have conference realignment where you're like, the Big Ten is adding teams solely because Fox is telling them they need to add teams because we need exciting games.
Yeah.
And then on the campuses, they're not playing exciting games.
No.
Georgia's number one, Michigan's number two. The week that those two teams are currently slated to play the first ranked opponent is November 11th.
For both of them?
Yeah. Penn State and Ole Miss.
Yeah.
That's like, if we could schedule better, the one thing the Alliance had right, the Big Ten not shivved everybody, was let's just have we don't need to take your league. Let's just make sure we have a Pac-12 Big Ten challenge, some kind of thing like that. So then instead of Michigan playing Bowling Green this weekend, maybe they're playing UCLA or USC or Oregon or whatever. And and Indiana's playing someone exciting. But it's like literally like, okay, you got a good, exciting game. You're going to play in Indianapolis. You're going to play in Louisville. All your fans can go, both teams' fans, people who live next to each other, Southern Indiana. He's a Louisville fan. I'm an Indiana fan. Like, create some excitement for our teams that don't always get a lot of excitement. And they're like, yeah, forget it. We got to beat Illinois State. We need a W. It is disappointing.
Well, it's the argument right now. You know, there's this long standing, probably now 2 year argument in the SEC about nine games, and this is one of the issues, right? Is that there are plenty of teams in the SEC, plenty of schools who don't want to play that extra conference game, and instead want to play Louisiana Monroe or Middle Tennessee State because they want the win for either, you know, bowl eligibility or that's the main thing. They want the win, and half the league is going to take a loss. I will say, as bad as this week's slate of games is, next week's slate is awesome. Terrific. Fantastic. Yeah, it's terrific. You know, if our listeners haven't reviewed next week's slate, and it lines up really well TV-wise, the noon window is Oklahoma in Cincinnati, Florida State in Clemson. The early afternoon at 3:30 is Colorado, Oregon, Ole Miss, Alabama. And then the night games are Ohio State, Notre Dame, of course, and Iowa, Penn State. So,
yep. That's what we want to get to. Yeah. Part of this is coincidence, but it is there. Quick Jim Harbaugh updates. We got more info on what he did on his day off. This is becoming an ongoing saga.
Other than the chain gang? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did the chain gang. He also admitted that the week before he was supposed to bring the snacks, Gatorade and some snacks to the game. That was his parent obligation on the youth football team, but he forgot to bring the food. Poor effort. He said he told the kids, I think he told a Detroit TV station, have you heard of the saying, an army travels best on an empty stomach?
Could you imagine the kids' reactions?
Yeah, fourth graders.
That's so great.
Now, that is actually not, that is Napoleon's quote, but Napoleon said an army travels on its stomach, which is you have to, if you're building a military, you have to feed them and they will march better. So we got it all wrong.
That makes it even better.
But I feel like that was a Jack Harbaugh comment to his sons.
I guarantee it.
If you're hungry in the car and like, Dad, can we stop for McDonald's because we're driving somewhere? We say, an army. That's something a dad would say, right?
Totally.
Yeah. An army travels best on an empty stomach, and the kids didn't know to look up Napoleon's actual quote. And Harbaugh actually believed it, but this is a mess. This is a total mess.
That's the most believable scenario I've ever heard.
I think it is. Yeah. Jack is an old Jack Harbaugh saying, not Napoleon. Both great leaders, worldwide famous. He also said during the game, he watched with his kids, he caught the front lawn cut pregame. Then he and his family went to McDonald's at halftime. Mm-hmm. The week before, they'd gone to Panera.
A man mows his lawn best on a full stomach, I guess.
got the two cheeseburger. I don't know what he got. And then after the game, after Michigan beat UNLV, he mowed the backyard. So okay. He called it good, productive day. I think Harbaugh is more entertaining if he never coaches again.
I agree.
Ward Manuel, will you please suspend him for some more games? We need content here.
I want a non-conference suspension for him for every season.
Yes, please. Yes. We need at least, we don't need him back at three. Give the NCAA their four, and then let's do that. Let's see what we can get. All right, the Pac-2 filed a lawsuit against the quitters. Ross, I know you're up on this. It was a lawsuit saying we are the only two that get to vote. You can't have a meeting. They want to have a meeting of the Pac-12 where everyone gets a vote. Washington State and Oregon State are saying we are the Pac-12. We should make the votes. They had a court. They got a judge to agree with them that the Pac-12 cannot hold a meeting. What a sport this is. At the end of the Zoom call, a bunch of Cougar and Wazoo fans jumped on and started. They unmuted themselves and risked contempt of court to yell "Go Cougs" and "Go Beavs."
Yeah. Well, to begin the hearing, because it's just a Zoom here. What I don't understand is there are Zooms that you could set up where the whoever's orchestrating the Zoom or managing it can control the mutes of everybody. And for whatever reason, this court hearing was set up where you controlled your video and your audio. And so as the hearing is beginning, all of a sudden we hear this, and everybody's looking around, and everybody in the court's looking around because they have speakers in the court. They can hear what's going on in the Zoom because one of the attorneys is on Zoom along with us. And the judge is like, hey, mute him, kick him out. So they kicked out that person, whoever that was, and then the hearing got rolling. And then, at the end of the hearing, a couple of fans chimed in. It was an interesting hearing. The judge, Gary Libby, in this, by the way, is a courthouse in Whitman County, Washington. It's like a population 3,000, tiny little place. you know, and it just outside of, I think, a Pullman.
And that's why there was this spit, because how often does this court have nationally people zooming in?
Yeah, right. By all means. Right.
Come on, like, sir, yes. You totally were going 50. Yeah, fact, it was a 35. no, officer, I was dodging a moose. I'll cut the fine in half. That's the court. I mean,
and the judge was so that, right? He was so like small town court judge. And at one point he said, we were entering court and my bailiff or assistant or whatever asked me, what is this case about, judge? And the judge said, well, there's going to be some cougars here, some beavers. There's going to be some Trojans, some Bruins. There's going to be some Sun Devils, some Wildcats. There's going to be some Ducks. And the bailiff's like, whoa, do I need to call animal control? So that's the kind of court that this was. That's what's going on here. Anyway, so to get down to the actual.
What a sport.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, 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 yeah. To get down to the actual, it was about a 90-minute hearing. The judge ruled, as you mentioned, Dan, that Oregon, in favor of Oregon State and Washington State, granting their temporary restraining order that forbids the Pac-12 board of directors, which is a president from each of the Pac-12 schools, to meet. And they did it for a few reasons. One, I think, is the fear from Oregon and Oregon State and Washington State administrators that when the board of directors meets, that they will outvote them on various topics, 10 to 2, the outgoing members versus the current members, including potentially dissolving the league. Well, the Pac-12's argument, the attorneys argued that no, that there's no plan to dissolve the league, that this was just a meeting over a retention plan and a services plan. The retention plan was about the 195 Pac-12 employees and how to retain them, given the fact that in July there will be probably no Pac-12. And then the services plan was really interesting. And this is one of probably the biggest, I think, kind of news nugget that came out of this. The services plan was a plan that would have the Pac-12, the league itself, pay transition costs for the departing members. And again, so you could see why there would be concern in Oregon State and Washington State that they would be outvoted by the 10 outgoing members to have the league pay for whatever fees. So the judge, I think, you know, cited what most people would believe is the right side here, in that for at least for now, there's a restraining order on any board meetings. However, there's a second part of this, which is the court determining who has seats and voting power on the board. Is it just Oregon State and Washington State? The bylaws in the Pac-12 state that outgoing members shouldn't have a seat on the board, shouldn't have voting power moving forward. So that is still to be determined. I think there probably will be a hearing in the next month or so on that portion of this.
Yeah, the whole thing is it's just so hilarious. It's terrible what's happened to the Pac-12, but the fact that we are in rural Washington, you know, going to court to try to decide, you know, decisions of $50 million or more dollars, and, you know, the future of these programs. Yeah, the judge is probably, like, usually bringing guys up. You've been charged with shooting a black bear out of season, sir. How do you plead? But, I find myself rooting for, like, Oregon State and Washington State. I want them to win in all matters here, because I feel like they've just been trampled. This is like Ukraine versus Russia. Like, they've been invaded. They've been, you know, trying to be overrun by everybody else. And I would like to see them find a way to get the best deal they can out of a terrible, terrible situation for them.
So the one thing, Dan, before you go, there is one little other nugget. The Pac-12 attorney, Mark Lambert, at some point was speaking about how difficult of a time this has been on Pac-12 Commissioner George Kolivkov. It's been tough for him. Said Kolivkov is in a, quote, terrible position. And the judge interrupted and said, well, according to this, George Kolivkov is in Montana. And you can imagine that's where he has a vacation home. So it was really something.
Very tough. Very tough. Yeah. It's a weekday and he's at his vacation home in Montana. Are you showing up for work if you're the Pac-12 commissioner? Like, go ahead and fire me, man.
I'm going to hang out in Kalispell for a while till I get fired.
Oregon State Washington State should win all the lawsuits. Everyone else quit and took bigger money. It's their money. I'm all inside of those guys. All right. Finally, we do have a little one more court. We can do People's Court. This is an update on the numerous legal dramas that we've been following. A U.S. judge rejected a Burger King's bid to dismiss a lawsuit claiming that it cheated hungry customers by making its Whopper sandwich appear larger than it actually is. This is from Reuters. A judge in Miami said Burger King must defend against the claim that its depiction of Whoppers on its in-store menu boards mislead reasonable customers, amounting to a breach of contract. So the lawsuit suggests that the picture of the Whopper inside Burger King has the ingredients overflow over the bun, and that the burgers are 35% larger. Imagine the legal intern that had to research this. They believe this is worse than my 24/7 composite math. 35% larger and contain more than double the meat than the chain actually serves. Burger King said that what they deliver looks, quote, exactly like the picture. Judge wasn't having it, said it should be up to the jurors to, quote, tell us what reasonable people think. Now, there are similar suits against McDonald's and Wendy's in New York, and Taco Bell is getting sued in Brooklyn because their crunch wraps aren't as full as the ads. Justice 40, thoughts on the litigation that is bringing down the fast food advertising market?
Well, the litigation, I'm 100% for the consumers because they're all right. It's one of the biggest lies of all time is what the way they portray your burger or your burrito or whatever, your crunch wrap, and what you actually get. I mean, how many times have we seen that? You get you order your quarter pounder with cheese or whatever. It's squashed. It's like mangled. The ketchup's all over the side of the bag. It's not actually on the burger. No, this is a slam dunk in favor of those of us out here who want our fast food to actually resemble the fast food that we are being marketed. Do it.
Absolutely. Also, it's kind of like buy a bag of chips and you open the bag and you look down there and it's like, what the hell is this? It's
they
like a third full of the bag. Yeah. There's more air in there than chip. Same thing going on here. You know, consumers continuously are getting screwed. I was just doing expenses the other day. I stayed at a $149 a night rate hotel, tax $21. City, whatever tax, $12. Valet, $30. Whatever service fee, $9. By the end of it, staying at a $220 a night hotel.
Yeah. Yeah. They're sticking it, man. Sticking it to this. They in the ad, they bring out the burger. You never see Food Network. It's plated. Like those competitions, like Bobby Flay. Yeah. Just put that thing
beautiful
together.
Yeah.
In fact, it's Jimmy, the kid down the street, who had two gummies before he went into work. And was checking
and
his cell
job anyway. Yeah.
Hates his job and switched his fantasy football lineup three times during his shift. Who made the burger. Yeah. And God bless Jimmy, but he ain't no Bobby Flay.
Yeah, Jimmy don't give a crap how your burger looks or what size it is or whether it fits the bun.
I get you trying to make it look appetizing, but here's the thing. Here's the counter. I'm just throwing it out for devil's advocate. I mean, we've been screwed over by this so many times, yet it's not like it's your first trip to Burger King.
No. Look, yes. This is
not. When did you ever get the Whopper that looked like the Whopper?
This is not the first fraud, fast food fraud rodeo by any means. It happens every single time you go, and it has for decades. But hey, if it's time to stand up, I'm standing up with them. Let's rise up against fast food fraud.
Do it once, shame on you. Do it twice, shame on me. I don't know. I am on the side of the consumer. Come on, BK. The ads are ridiculous. The Whopper looks, Yeah. The Whopper, I think, is particularly egregious. I don't know about the Crunch Wrap. Isn't that like hidden in there? Anyway, that's our show. We're going to pick the games that are good this weekend. Backyard Brawl, always fun. We'll regale you with some tales of the Backyard Brawl. So continue to subscribe. Leave us nice reviews, 5-star reviews. Tell your friends about us, and we will talk to you later this week.